Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Shall kill all of your
everybody's had a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible you, pages, but you can pretend like you will. A dog.
That was wow.
Don't walk alone.
Conspiracy.
If you're a boy or a girl.
Aliens.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hiya.
It's a Carly case. It's a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
It's a CC. It's a Carly case.
It's a CC.
It's a CC. I like it. Carly is bringing us tonight the story of Joshua Guimond. I'm so excited to talk about this, Carly.
Oh my God, I'm so pumped. I have to say the biggest, hugest shout out to our fan, Haley, our listener, Haley. She emailed us with this recommendation. Yes, like I looked into this case, like this is interesting. And she emailed me back her entire term paper covering this whole thing, like the psychology behind it and stuff, and it was an A+ paper. So
nice,
thank you so
Haley.
Much for sharing
thank
all
you.
That info.
Thanks, Haley. That's
and
awesome.
We appreciate it.
Joshua Guimond, political science major at St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota. It was his junior year on November 9th, 2002, and Josh had attended a party that night in a dorm at Metten Court, which is located on the lower campus of St. John's, also known as Flinttown. It was like not a party, it was like a card party. So like a couple, you know, a few friends getting together playing cards. So Josh left the card party somewhere between 11 p.m. and midnight, allegedly to go to the bathroom. And when he did not return after 15 minutes, his friends assumed he just went back to his on-campus apartment at St. Moore House, which is about a 3-minute walk from where the party was. And this is located in the middle of campus. According to his friends, Josh was not inebriated when he left the party. They thought maybe he just got tired and decided to go home to go to bed. And it was not like him to just leave without saying goodbye. Did he mean to come back? Maybe he lost at a game of cards and wanted to just call it a night and just decided to leave. You know, was he meeting somebody that the friends didn't know about? So I don't know if you guys can see Quinny's, if you pulled up the outline, but I have like a little campus map to look at. So
yes, I do. Thank you for the visual aid.
So Metten Court where the party was, all the way at the bottom right. St. Moore House where he lived is number 18, more toward the middle. And then the Abbey, which we'll talk about later, is all the way at the top in the middle of number 3. So Josh was seen passing by the Seaton Apartments and crossing Stump Lake to the intersection, then walking towards his apartment, but Josh never arrived at his dorm. When his friends called his apartment shortly after he left the party, there was no answer and they assumed he was asleep, and Josh has never been seen again. He left the party and that was it.
No trace.
It's a 3-minute walk, dude.
Vanished.
Completely vanished.
I mean, I know we're going to get into this, obviously, but that just, everything about that says abduction to me.
Absolutely.
Everything about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So Josh was born on June 18th, 1982. He's originally from Maple Lake, Minnesota, and he's the only child of parents Brian Guimond and Lisa Cheney. His family was very close. They would go to church every Sunday. He was raised Catholic. And as a student at Maple Lake High School, Josh was voted class president and most likely to succeed. So he was very ambitious. He was responsible, good student, had lots of friends, that kind of thing. His ambition continued into college when he entered St. John's University, not far from his home, which is like 45 minutes north where he grew up. He was involved in extracurriculars such as the school paper, The Record, part of the club College Republicans, and he was part of the mock trial team. According to the SJU website, their mock trial team is very active and has landed in the top 20 national championship tournament several times in recent years. He's busy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good student. He's super serious about it. He's doing all these extracurriculars that you really need to dedicate your time to. Those are like serious ones.
Right.
You know? He had planned to become a lawyer and had hoped to follow in his family members' footsteps by joining politics. And he'd hoped to maybe one day serve in the Minnesota House of Representatives. representatives. During high school and some of college, Josh had a long-term girlfriend, Katie Benson, but about a month before he disappeared, they had broken up. But reportedly, they ended things on good terms and were still friendly.
I read a blog post from a girl who did mock trial with him, and she was like amazed at how good of terms they were on. After they broke up, there was no harshness, or she was also apparently the girlfriend was also involved in mock trial. They would see each other at events and it was like totally good.
Totally fine. That's very unusual.
It is, especially for college.
It is. Yeah.
You're like, oh, I never want to be around this person again. Like it gets awkward quick. Yeah.
So like we said, on November 9th, 2002, Josh attended a card party with his friends. It was a Saturday night. The day after the party, Josh did not show up for a mock trial team practice, and his friends raised the alarm when he could not be found anywhere. The friends called that night after he left the party, called his dorm, no answer. His friends tried to call him again after he was late to the mock trial team practice, which is in like the afternoon at some point, still no answer. And this is extremely unlike Josh to not show up for a commitment, especially since he was co-captain of the mock trial team.
Not normal.
His friends would end up calling his parents to see if Josh had maybe gone home for some reason, but his parents had not heard from him either, which is got to be like the worst phone call ever. So Josh's roommate, Nick, he had last seen him around 8:30 the night before when Josh left for the card party. He didn't like Josh said, hey, Nick, do you want to come smoke a cigar with me? My friends, we're going to go to the card party, like come along. Nick didn't want to, and that was the last time he saw him. He confirmed that Josh had left behind his eyeglasses, his contact lenses, and his credit cards, and none of his personal belongings were missing from the apartment.
Glasses missing is like a, that's like no purse left behind. Like for someone that needs glasses, that's like a, like if you're going to be going somewhere, you're going to take your glasses with you.
He definitely left the dorm to go to the party without them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But if you're going to like go somewhere like for the night, like in the night, you're going to, you would more than likely take the glasses.
So Josh's car was later found undisturbed on the campus, so he didn't take the car anywhere. Also, at the time he disappeared, he was not wearing weather-appropriate clothing. Like, he was just wearing a St. John's hoodie and blue jeans if it's like 32-degree weather. Again, it's only a three-minute walk, so that makes sense if he's only planning on going from dorm to dorm. And friends and family knew Josh was like a very well-planned, organized person. So all of this was very unusual. So Sunday, November 10th, the searches begin for Josh, but it's like late in the day. So only minimal searches could be conducted in the dark. And Monday, November 11th, the entire St. John's campus and the surrounding areas, which is like 2,700 acres of campus, they were searched by horse and by foot policemen, volunteers. They include buildings, a power plant, all of the wooded areas, because there's like a bunch of woodlands around. There were hundreds of local volunteers, law enforcement, and 118 troops of the National Guard. They searched the grounds and the lakes, which is like, I just, like 118 troops of the National Guard to cover 16 square miles, I feel is not a lot.
Like, it's not a lot. A lot of people point to this as like, you know, an initial response, a show of force right away. It's really not. It's not enough people. No. And you take a look at that campus map. Sure, look around outside, but we really need to go into all of the buildings.
Yes. Imagine how many rooms and closets and whatever are in that entire camp. Like, yeah, I just felt like that's just not enough. The Stearns County Sheriff's Department would use men on foot as well as on horses to search for Josh. And the SJY. I'm going to have to say SJU so many flipping times. Because what the fuck? So the university campus and the surrounding areas contain a lot of woodlands, like I said, which were all thoroughly searched. And there's also Stumpf Lake. Now, Stumpf Lake runs between Metincourt and St. Mar's House. So the sheriff's department concentrated their efforts around that lake, thinking that maybe Josh possibly fell in and drowned. Immediate thought. So they had to make the decision to lower the water level of the lake in order to properly search. And they got that approved. And they ended up dragging the lake, uncovered no clues whatsoever.
And immediately that's so blood boiling to me too, because I forget what special it was that I was watching, but like someone made such a good point that like they spent so much time initially right away looking on focusing on that lake, and we'll get into it more later, but like why? And look at what that, the damage that that caused by so much focus being on that lake. Those are days that are going by that people should have been looking elsewhere.
And it's not a waste because they're obviously still actively searching, but it's essentially right. a waste.
You're not focusing your attention. Listen, I know accidental drownings happen probably more often than we even really know or right. want to admit, but like, that's an odd one. Like, I know there's just a body of water there, but that's an odd
and they
thing
just made
for
that
to happen in a 3-minute walk.
Yeah. Like, they got that thought into their head and like, that was what happened. And that's how they're going to find him. The end.
Cut to, there's a monk just like closing a curtain in the window. Like, it's enraging, Quinny. You're right.
Oh, my
like it's
God.
Blood boiling. There are all these other places that you could be looking right now, probably as fast as you possibly can before evidence is destroyed.
They're still focusing on the Sam Lake. They would send a request to the DNR, the Department of National Resources, to totally drain the lake, but they haven't. They're awaiting approval. They hadn't gotten it yet. I will say the Minnesota State Patrol also aided in the search, and at least they are the ones sending the helicopters around to do an aerial search. The woods on around the campus, so that's good at least. And there's a statewide alert by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Minnesota Crime Alert Network Missing Persons Bulletin. So they're getting the word out there for sure. There are so many flipping buildings on this campus.
It's not okay.
I know he went missing outside, essentially what we believe, but you don't know that he didn't enter one of the buildings.
No, no trace. Right?
Nobody knows.
No trace. So no, exactly. His glasses and wallet and pants aren't sitting on the edge of the lake. What the hell are we looking in the lake for?
What the fuck was happening and what was being covered up while yeah. everybody was searching in the gosh darn lake?
Because in the meantime, at Josh's apartment, the Guimond family would have computer analysts search Josh's computer for evidence. And they find that in the hours after Josh disappeared and in the subsequent days after, until they got hold of the computer, someone erased items from his computer's hard drive. Around 300 items were deleted. Several very large items.
Quinny's, something ain't clean, Binnie's.
So we're
this
not exactly
is be just beyond.
Beyond.
This is freaking yeah. beyond.
If it this is not the most perfect setup for conspiracy level, whatever, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Cover up extraordinaire. But we're not exactly sure who did the deleting. However, some of the information that was erased and later recovered was about making fake identification cards. So like fake IDs for kids, because Josh is only 20. Of course, kids are going to want to drink in college. Like, that's what do.
And they're which makes you think IDs. That it could have possibly been Josh that deleted that.
Well, no, because it looks like everything was deleted in the hours and days after he went missing. So Josh's roommate, Nick, didn't cop to actually deleting or anything, but he did state that Josh was not involved in the making of the fake IDs. If he was, big deal. Like, okay, fine. You know, totally. Like,
maybe he's just not trying to throw him under the bus
exactly.
after the fact. Sure.
Because he doesn't know, is he going to come back and he's going to get a shitload of trouble. Mm-hmm. However, I'm not convinced that all 300 of those files are about the IDs. You can't tell
because anytime that you delete, if you're running out of space, for example, on your iPhone or on your computer, mm-hmm. it's very rare that you delete 100 items,
yeah.
let alone yeah. 300. Like, that is a
right.
concentrated, get rid of this, dump gotta it. Be gone.
Not to mention the timing.
Yeah, the timing.
It's like, it brings me back all the way back to freaking our first or second episode, Menendez Brothers, when they delete the wills deleted, like
mm-hmm. yes.
only hours or something, you know, things were altered
yes.
only hours before or days after it happened. Like, it's like the timing really puts it into context too. Like,
absolutely. Yep. So around the same time that Josh disappeared, three other college-aged people disappeared from the Minnesota and Wisconsin areas. They were all Minnesota residents, and all of them vanished on weekend nights after having visited bars or parties. This is like all within like a 2 to 3 week period in the same essential area. So Erica Dahlquist, she went missing on October 30th from Brainerd, Minnesota, which is about an hour northwest of Minneapolis. The 21-year-old Union Steward was last seen in downtown Brainerd at the Tropical Nights Bar when she left with an unidentified man. There's also Chris Jenkins. He was 2 hours south of where Erica was. A 21-year-old missing since October 31st, so the following day, from Minneapolis. He vanished after he left a downtown bar in the early hours of November 1st. The University of Minnesota lacrosse goalie and Eden Prairie native was last seen in his Native American Halloween costume. which was not, it's not great. Like indigenous people are not costumes.
It's true. That would not be
a different time, but it was not, it's not acceptable. But either way, he is a 21-year-old kid that went missing in a very distinctive costume that could easily be spotted if wherever. So Chris's story is also linked to a certain Jacob Wetterling, which I know us Quinnies know about, but I'm sure most of our listeners know about, if not all, who in October of 1989, he was an 11-year-old who was abducted near his St. Joseph, Minnesota home. And Jacob, along with his brother and friend, first of all, we have got to cover that case. I know we have recommendations, like emails requesting.
We've had a lot of people ask for that case.
We have to.
I think most of the people who ask, though, can understand why we're not super eager to talk about the horrific. That is just absolute stuff of nightmares, heartbreaking. I had this aha moment today, just sitting there being like, why do I know the Stearns Police Department? Oh, yeah. They're the ones who dropped the ball on the Jacob Wetterling case.
Exactly. So then there's another missing 20-something-year-old. So 1.5 hours east of Minneapolis now, Michael Knoll. He's a 22-year-old Minnesotan who disappeared November 6th when he left an Eau Claire, Wisconsin bar just before midnight after celebrating his birthday. So the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire student was last seen, quote unquote, highly intoxicated by an elderly woman who said he mistakenly walked into her house near the Chippewa River and then left.
Wow. Okay, so we got October 30th, 31st, 6th, and then 9th.
Exactly.
Damn.
So like I did like a math, like I was trying to like pinpoint, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like Collegeville is 2.5 hours northwest of Eau Claire, about 1 hour and 20 minutes northwest of Minneapolis. And then Brainerd, where Erica was, is 1 hour and 15 minutes north of Collegeville. So like it's literally just like this weird rectangle and it's very, essentially all within 1 hour, 2 hours of each other.
Strange.
Mm-hmm. And they're all the same age.
Can you really just say that's coincidence?
The chip on their shoulder when they talk about these four cases and how they are not related. It's like, you know what, man? Honestly, we wouldn't even have to be talking about this if you handled it. So I don't think that you have to have an attitude.
Exactly. That's my other thing too. Like, oh, okay, really? There's no relation? Prove it to me.
It's so frustrating.
It really is.
I can't.
It's like hitting a wall over and over again. How do you think the dad feels?
In regards to all these different cases, right, around the same time, the bodies of Chris Jenkins and Michael Knoll would subsequently be found in local bodies of water. So, okay, the water, body of water theory is not completely unfounded, right? I'm still not convinced. So the third, Erica Dahlquist, she was actually the victim of a homicide, confirmed. Her remains were found on May 15th, 2004 on property owned by the grandparents of William Gene Myers, which is a longtime suspect in her case. And he was charged with second degree murder. So like hers is the only ruled homicide, whereas the others were, you know, accidental drowning, allegedly. So none of the missing young adults knew each other. However, it's suggested that the four cases might be linked, obviously, as it is statistically improbable that the four people of similar age would randomly vanish from the same area around the same time.
It's like highly statistically improbable.
I want a professional, what is it, statistician? Email us. So in addition, all three of the men who disappeared were college students with similar heights and builds and were described as high achievers. So they had all of that in common, but the police that investigated everything cited glaring differences in the four cases and stated there was no connection. So later that week, Thursday, November 14th, Josh's father, Brian, attended a meeting and a press conference at the state capitol for families of the three other missing students, and he would meet the Jenkins family, who would later help the Guimon family in their search for Josh. Now, the Jenkins family actually hired a search dog named Hoover to help in the search for Chris, and the Guimon family would also get their help. Like, obviously, this is before Chris's body was unfortunately found. I love Hoover so much. Hoover would end up picking up both Josh's and Chris's scents during the searches. So Hoover is definitely on the trail for Chris. And then when he goes to search for Josh, he traces the scent to St. John's Abbey, and the dog shows interest in entering the Abbey. Now, from the apartment where Josh was last seen, Hoover would follow his scent to Stump Lake, onto Josh's apartment, and then onto the Abbey, which is on, like we said, all the way at the other end of the campus. So normally you'd think, okay, great. The dog caught the scent. Let's go search it. You'd think that, right? Like that would be common That would be common sense, right? That'd be logical. No, so the Abbey would not let them enter. They wouldn't let them enter. They wouldn't let them continue the search because pets or dogs were not allowed on campus.
Okay.
You're gonna-
You know what? No.
Okay. Okay.
No. No. Not a time to whip out the rule book.
This okay? is not
really
the time.
Not the time.
It is not the time.
If you got nothing okay. to hide, why not let the dog in? I don't understand it.
So they're pulling the fucking rule book out and they're saying dogs aren't allowed on campus. So they claimed it would impede the official investigation because technically a canine search is a private hired search, right? Not part
right.
of the...
Right. We see this. There's some prejudice with the dogs. There we saw is. This in Madeline McCann. There's yep. a lot of questions about their legitimacy for sure.
Which I resent. Penny Bell, Hoover's handler, was like upset at this, obviously. Like, no, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Hoover is an A+ search dog. Okay. His findings are legitimate. He had literally helped a huge manhunt in Wisconsin and he set a record by finding a body trapped under ice.
Yeah. I trust the bloodhound.
I'm okay? trusting him. But like we said, we know that search dog findings aren't admissible under law. Bullshit.
Yeah. It's just that the dog going to the door and wanting to go inside, that should lead a competent investigator to think, perhaps there is, like, there are grounds for us to get more involved with the Abbey, right?
Honestly, regardless of the dog, okay, which we all know how I feel about the dog, but regardless of, take that away, the fact that a student is missing and he went missing while on campus is enough of a reason to search the frickin' Abbey. I don't care right. whether the Abbey is like technically a separate entity from
no,
the university.
No, it's campus. It's on
it's
campus.
Still on the campus. There's still right. a missing kid. Like, who yep. cares? So the week of December 2nd, the Stearns County Sheriff's Department had contacted and questioned 8 of the 9 students present at the card party the night Josh disappeared. But they stated they were unable to contact the remaining student. So first of all, why is it taking 3 weeks to you even get to the students and questioning them about what happened? They're the last people to see the missing kid. And just now you're going to finally get around to them to see what they want to say. And you're the sheriff's department. You can't find a college student. Like, you just can't find the 9th one to talk to them. Just in the wind. So back in Maple Lake, where Josh is originally from, everyone's tying yellow ribbons to every sign, post, and tree and fence by the Maple Lake High School student council members as visual reminders of the search for Joshua. So not only is everyone in Collegeville and on the campus searching for him, but like, people have come in from Maple Lake to search for him there. They're reminding everybody back home to continue searching for him because nobody knows anything. So time goes on. 2003, January, the Abbey finally allows Hoover to search the Abbey. And he picks up Josh's scent in the back of the Abbey and then onto Lake Sagadigan behind it. The media would get involved and they would start attacking Hoover's credibility. And the searches move from the Abbey area to other areas.
Yeah, it's a pretty big campus, right? Like there's a lot of other places that they could have picked up a scent, repeatedly right. picking up the scent at the Abbey. So somebody needs to go in there. Somebody needs to have a little look-see around. I imagine that this area derives a lot of jobs and a lot of money from St. John's University. I'm sure that they are a great draw for the local businesses and for property values and for all of these things. I'm sure they don't want to piss off a major job creator sure. in the area. But
that is so blood boiling that I want to smash things in my house.
So the sheriff's department would send divers into East Gemini Lake, which is another lake, and it's across from Stump Lake, the first lake. They would search there. They would send divers there. But Lake Sagadigan, behind the Abbey where Hoover picked up the scent, would only be searched with underwater cameras, and no evidence of Josh would be found in either of the lakes. Can we be done with the lakes? Because there's no evidence found. Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because the other two victims that of the four that were all mm-hmm. happening at the same time that were, you know, deemed to be at accidental drowning. Mm-hmm. If they're not related to each other, what are we so obsessed with these lakes for?
Right.
So much time wasted and so much more of a cold case does it become every second.
But then if they're that obsessed with the lake, the one lake that got a scent, the one lake is the one lake they didn't send divers into. What did they have to look into the East Gemini Lake? We've never even heard of this lake before. So there would be some more canine searches, which is pretty cool. And a plan that included Hoover searching an area and two boathouses near the lake, and Brian Guimond said that the appropriate authorities were notified prior to the search. But when we get to the day of the search, a deputy on site stated that a search warrant was required to search the boathouses, so they were not able to search. Now, a later statement by Pam Jensen, which is the Stearns County Sheriff's Department captain, said that it was not necessary for Brian and his crew to search the boathouses as they had already been searched.
Pam Jensen's child goes to St. John's, and the person who becomes the sheriff, the subsequent sheriff, he has a son at SJU as well.
Of course he does.
More dog searches are allowed at some point. The dog search sumped lake again, and a sonar unit is also used. Again, no evidence is found. And at this point, miracle of miracles, law enforcement officially rule out Stump Lake. Okay, one of the places ruled it out.
How much time?
At least January of 2003. So in May of 2003, the Trident Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization designed to respond to drownings or water-based crime situations. So they get involved, and they would use sophisticated underwater search equipment to search all three of the lakes. At this point, I'm so tired of talking about the lakes, but it needs to be talked about at least. Side scan sonar techniques with multiple directional passes, ensuring complete and overlapping coverage of the lakes, that was conducted by the team. All three lakes were cleared with no relevant evidence found. Meanwhile, Josh's father, Brian, would express his obvious discontent with the investigation and the Minnesota law enforcement because
this wasn't taken seriously from the beginning.
From the very
beginning. The fact that you see those kids getting questioned so far down the line, that's all you need. That's all you need there to be like, oh, they're not concerned.
So the number of ways that law enforcement has completely missed the mark here included delays in conducting a search after Josh disappeared. Again, delays in interviewing students and the failure to examine the hard drive of Josh's computer. So Brian Guimond would be quoted as saying, as you can see, the facts state that the investigation has not been performed in a timely manner, and some things have never been done. As a parent, you can see how this has been very frustrating. I think it is time somebody is held accountable for their mistakes. It is obvious that we have had no cooperation from the first day. And if anything, we have been lied to and misled. This is my son, a human being, not a missing animal that we are talking about and trying to find.
How many times do we see this? This is Jessica Easterly's family.
Yep.
There are so many cases like this where there are parents of victims that are so pushed to the side. This man, what is he? He's a father. He's a middle-class dad, like so many people. What he can only do as much as he can do. Like, the police actually have the resources.
In June of that year, 2003, St. John's sends a letter to the Guimond family stating that the Stearns County Sheriff's Department indicated that the SJU property has been satisfactorily examined and no further searches were planned.
So
it's like you sending a letter that's saying, hi, I am responsible for something in this case.
Something incredibly shady happened here, but don't worry. We don't plan to look around here anymore.
But don't worry, we're done now.
I think there's legitimate grounds here for negligent supervision.
Yes.
I think the college itself should be sued specifically for the fact that he was lost on that campus.
100%.
Like,
without a trace.
Absolutely.
How can you send a letter like that to a family?
First of all, be just straight up audacity.
Yeah, that's outrageous to me.
And if anyone is going to tell them that property has been satisfactorily examined and no further searches are planned, you would think that would be the Stearns County Sheriff's Department. So time goes on. Nothing is found. 2004 rolls around. March of 2004, SJU, via the order of St. Benedict, requested and was granted a temporary harassment restraining order against Brian Guimond. And after a hearing, the order would be put into effect for 2 years.
What? I mean, did you expect him to go away?
Exactly.
Did you expect him to stop asking?
And you could argue, like, this is a Catholic-based university where they're like preaching.
Do unto others.
Yes. And this is how they're treating people. And regardless of whether you're a religious person or not, you should just care about another human being. All right. So let's talk about some theories about what may have happened.
Yes, please.
Let's get into it.
I'm curious where he is now with his faith too, after all of this.
Yes.
Yes.
Agreed. You know?
Firstly, aliens.
Could be. No trace.
However, Sorry, Jocelyn, it's very unlikely. I looked into it. And according to the National UFO Reporting Center.org, the only UFO sighting in Minnesota in November of 2002 occurred in St. Cloud on 11/7, 2 days prior. And it was only a 20-second boomerang-shaped object that just showed up in the sky and then went away. Mm. I looked it. I researched it just to
report it. Okay.
So that's what's reported.
I'll agree.
I don't know if someone saw something and didn't report it, but that is what is officially reported.
Did they return and erase the files on this computer?
Probably not. That's a little bit above and beyond. So maybe an accidental death, like the others were ruled, right? Authorities obviously believed that Josh was likely slightly intoxicated when he left the party and that he stumbled into a body of water and drowned. But obviously they have failed to come up with any evidence to support their theory. Like no clothing, like literally nothing of Josh's has ever been found.
They just thought that he went to use the bathroom. Like they weren't like my friend stumbled to the bathroom. Right. So it's like, that's very unclear. I'm iffy about that too.
And at this point, you would think after all of this time has gone on and Josh has never been found, two things. If that were the case, his body would have been found.
Definitely.
Secondly, you would think after all this time, one of those friends would say, you know what, actually, like, I'm not scared anymore of getting in trouble. Like, yes, Josh was definitely drunk that night. Like, they're not going to be covering up for him years later.
It's true.
Because he had a couple drinks. So another possibility is that Josh was possibly struck by a vehicle on the night of his disappearance and killed. Now, some of the monks at St. John's Abbey attached to the university have a history of alcohol abuse. And the idea is that one of them possibly hit Josh and decided to cover up the crime to avoid a scandal.
This is a likely theory to me.
It's possible.
And the church covered it up.
However, in both of these instances, again, there would have been something left behind. There's not a trace of blood, a piece of clothing, a fiber, anything anywhere. So another theory is possible suicide or he ran away, but he wasn't depressed. As far as his friend said, and his friends and family say he wouldn't have done either of those things. Like he wouldn't just run away and start a new life without ever contacting his family again. There was no reason to do that. No,
it seems like he had ambitions.
Yes.
Right. You know, for after college and all of these things he wanted to do. Like
the only thing would be the girlfriend that he broke up with the month before.
This is so fucking similar to Craig Freer.
It's crazy.
So
if Josh had run away, he took literally nothing with him, like not even his glasses or his contacts. Why?
Yeah.
His credit cards and his social security number had never been used after his disappearance. There have been no bus or plane tickets that have been purchased by him to leave town. He would have just left in a hoodie and jeans with nothing on him in the middle of the night in cold Minnesota. If he had killed himself, again, it's likely we would have found his body somewhere or some sort of evidence.
And he's a junior on campus too. So he knows the weather. He knows, you know what I'm saying?
He's from Minnesota.
Right.
So another theory, abduction, which is a likely one. So there are no security cameras on campus at this time. So we'll never know. But it is possible that Josh was picked up by someone or forced into a car. And it's likely that the offender would be someone that the students at the school knew and trusted. Like someone that they at least saw regularly. It makes sense for them to be hanging around campus.
Right.
Definitely.
Especially in the middle of the night. There's no signs of struggle. Now, Brian Guimond believes this theory. He has never agreed with law enforcement's theory of the accidental drowning. And Josh's family and friends firmly believe it's a case of foul play. Now, Brian takes it one step further and thinks that although he can't prove it, he thinks it was likely that Josh was set up in order to be abducted. And that he's possibly being held somewhere. And Brian's opinion is that it involved one or more staff members at SJU. Now, he wouldn't name the person specifically in the interview, but he said he knows exactly the one person or two people that he's talking about. Mm-hmm. So he's not like, it's not just a broad, like, oh, it's got to be staff members. Like he thinks it's actually someone. Now, again, like we said earlier, there were rumors that Josh was maybe somehow linked to the fake ID ring, but that was never substantiated. So it's slightly possible, but unlikely that has any connection. Another theory, the smiley face killer. This is an interesting one.
A lot of people threw this at me in the comments after we did Craig Freer.
Yes.
About what about the smiley face killer, Jocelyn? And I think I dismissed the smiley face killer for the same reasons that you're going to dismiss him from Josh.
So the smiley face killer committed several murders in the late 1990s to the 2010s across several Midwestern states, mostly, a serial killer whose victims were all potentially inebriated, college-aged white males. Nearly all of their bodies were found in bodies of water for leaving a smiley face somewhere near the body, like a kind of signature. However, there is no smiley face found anywhere on SJU. And like we said, Josh's body has never been found. So like, while the smiley face isn't like an absolute 100% necessity for the smiley face killer, more often than not, it's there.
And the smiley face killer is setting up, leaving people in water and then tagging the crime in order for it to be found.
He wants to be noticed. He's like doing it for to be tagged. Yeah.
Now, could you suggest that maybe he's the reason behind Chris Jenkins and Michael Knoll? Maybe there was no smiley face. They were found in bodies of water and they were around the same time. So like maybe them for Josh, I just don't think so. So let's get into a really good one. The Abbey cover-up. So in the few months before Josh went missing, he had been looking into cases of sexual abuse by the monks at St. John's Abbey for a research paper he was writing. And he had been very outspoken in his criticism of the abuse scandals. Now, the Abbey had settled an undisclosed number of sex abuse cases by Abbey monks, at least 11 of which were credibly accused of misconduct.
Wow.
11 is still too fucking many. I don't care how many. So a private investigator was hired, found out that Abbot John Klassen had purposely withheld information from the Board of Trustees about monks who were offenders because he likely didn't want to lose any funding. Because like, you know, they'll lose their funding, they'll lose their donors. People won't want to have their kids go there anymore. Like Gainesville. Like Gainesville didn't want to be known as the Gainesville Ripper. They didn't want kids leaving college forever and not paying, you know. But what are you going to do? So this PI also believed that Josh's disappearance could possibly be linked to the monks. Remember Josh's computer and the deleted files. Now, Brian Guimond believes that this may be connected. Josh's internet search history included searches on the St. John's Abbey statute of limitations, and several large files have been deleted from his hard drive. He's looking into it for a research paper. Obviously, he's going to have a bunch of stuff saved on his computer. So like to me, a sexually motivated crime is very likely possible. Whether Josh had been too curious about researching the allegations, digging too deep, or if something specifically had actually happened to Josh by one of the monks, we don't really know. So a monk named Father Dan Ward was a previously honored top faculty member. So he was an accused perpetrator of sexual abuse towards students. Now, apparently, Ward was in the Bahamas at law school during the time that Josh went missing. Like we said, he's an accused perpetrator of sexual abuse. So I read a blog about an interview with one of Father Dan Ward's alleged victims or accusers, at least. And this person, first of all, it's terrible. This law school in the Bahamas thing, okay? When Father Ward came back from law school, he reached out to this victim again, was like chatting with him or whatever. All he wanted to talk about was how much of a good party time he had there, and that he was just fighting off the women with a stick. Because apparently, Quinnies, did you know that trying to seduce a priest is one of us women's most number one goals in life?
Did I know it's one of mine. It's one of my most near and dear goals in life.
Every day I wake up and I look in the mirror and I'm like, today I will fuck a priest. Too much? Okay.
No, it is not a goal of women. It's not the ultimate challenge.
No.
Just a fun little connection is that Father Ward was previously head of the mock trial team. Okay, like that rubs me the wrong fucking way. So there were a number of victims that accused Ward of inappropriate behavior and even questioned him during a presentation he gave. He did the presentation. One of his victims, there was a Q&A, and the victim went up and was like, oh, hey, so what do you think about inappropriate behavior with, you know, authority figures like monks and students and da da da? And he had no fucking answers. Like he was stuttering. He had nothing to say. The transcript is absolute gold. I wish I was there. So we don't know if he and Josh specifically had any encounters with each other, but like the mock trial team connection is just super eerie to me. And
it is.
So there is a potential suspect as well, a monk named Father Bruce Wolmering, who taught a sex class at some point, which I couldn't get enough information about, but either way.
Did also one of them live near or by Joshua? Was one of them in a building near him or something? Or the class was located in a building near him or something like that?
I want to say that Wolmering was near there because
yes,
if he wasn't part of Josh's dorm specifically, I believe he was like head of a dorm, you know, they always had monks around and likely like they were teachers, they were faculty members, they were counselors, basically like the RAs of the dorm sometimes.
I just remember reading somewhere that there was one in particular, like that was around a lot, around him a lot in particular.
But either way, this guy was accused of such crimes that allegedly began during the fall of 2002, which is precisely around the time that Josh went missing. So Walmering was accused of inappropriate behavior officially in 2003 from an SJU student, and then again accused in 2004 for occurrences that date back from the 1970s and 80s. So he was accused and found of wrongdoing by SJU personnel, but was allowed to keep teaching until the end of the following semester. At the end of that semester, he was awarded at a ceremony honoring top faculty that year as having had 20 years of service and was an outgoing department chair. He had already been allowed to keep teaching after being accused and found of wrongdoing. So he was an active faculty member, a monk, a counselor at the time that Josh went missing. There were a number of communications that were found between Walmering and several students that were found to be extremely inappropriate. Now, Walmering would end up at a treatment facility in Canada at some point after leaving the university. And his psychologist apparently told Abbott Klassen that he likely had a sexual disorder with compulsive and exploitative behaviors. Cool, cool, cool. So this is the kind of guy we have teaching our kids and just around students all the time and just hanging out. It was common practice that monks were figures of authority and were often in charge of the dormitories around the campus. Like they were just ingratiated all throughout the university. This is just a problem. Like considering all the accusations, like regardless of whether they're all found to be credible or not, or found of wrongdoing or inappropriate behavior or just straight up sexual abuse, don't have the monks just doing everything with the students and just being all the levels of authority. Like maybe don't do that.
And okay? Also with your already know, I'm sorry, Catholics, with your already known history and past and everything that you've already gone through, wouldn't you think that maybe you would like decrease the amount of monks that you do have? Like,
definitely not. No. Definitely not. Because like, then they're admitting, then they're implicated. Then they're saying, then they're
implicating themselves. Right.
It's happened here. It's happened on all of our watch, which it has, by the way. I mean, it's happened everywhere.
Literally.
For years and years. Every place, every person that you talk to, that I grew up in the Catholic Church, everyone has a story of somebody that they knew who that happened to. Like it's real. It fucking happened. But if they decrease the number of monks and they say, well, we're going to distance ourselves, are we even St. John's University anymore?
So instead they keep things exactly the same exact way and people end up murdered and missing.
So again, like I said, we don't know for sure that Walmering and Josh ever had any encounters or that Walmering abused Josh specifically, but he certainly fits the profile of like the offender that possibly had something to do with Josh, or obviously he was already accused of wrongdoing by other people and was allegedly abusing students around the same time that Josh disappeared. So whether he possibly abused Josh or Josh found out about it while he was researching everything, we don't know, but it's possible. So that whole Abby stuff to me seems like a very likely possibility that led to foul play. So the aftermath of all of this, nothing has ever been found. We've never found any trace of Josh. But just this year, 2021, March, Brian Guimond, Josh's father, filed a lawsuit against Stearns County to secure the investigative file from the Stearns County Sheriff's Office.
Good for him, too,
good
by
for
the way.
Him.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, here, here.
Now, Brian's legal team started with a formal request to the Sheriff's Office 2 years ago to access the work of Stearns County and a request the county denied. So now he's like, nope, now I'm going to sue you. So Stearns County said that the Guimond case remains active and in court filing contends releasing data would jeopardize the integrity of the investigation and could impede potential prosecution of anyone who played a role. A judge will make the final decision on what to do in the coming months and we will certainly keep you updated. I will be watching for this. Now, I looked on the website of the SJU, St. John's University, and I'm not sure of the exact date, but there were some changes made to their security policies and the missing person notification policy that they have on campus at some point in accordance with the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008. Couldn't find any changes in policies in regards to accused sexual abuse by a monk or a person of authority. The school and the Abbey did not answer my emails when I questioned them about this.
Rude.
Tell it to me straight. You have not not change any policies. Okay. Just tell me that. So in summary, Joshua Guimond is described as a white male with blonde hair and blue eyes. He would be 39 years old at the time of this recording. He's 5'10" and 170 pounds, and he has a vertical scar on his shoulder about 4 inches long and half an inch wide. Like we said before, Josh is supposed to wear contact lenses or eyeglasses, but he did not have either on him at the time he went missing. He was last seen wearing a gray Gap or SJU hooded sweatshirt, blue jeans, and a wristwatch. And if anyone has any information about Josh's disappearance, they should call the Stearns County Sheriff's Office at 320-251-4240. Final thoughts, Quinns?
Did you see anything about the incinerator?
No.
There's some allegation that the incinerator on campus was run the day following his disappearance.
Stop it.
I would not be surprised.
It's unsubstantiated, but there are rumblings about that. And then there's also some hint of him being seen standing behind a dumpster. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Again, not substantiated, but just these little, these weird ass little things that you're like, I just want to read you this little email from February 17th of 2003, sent at 6 o'clock in the morning from Bruce Walmering. Just let me know. I'm going to give you a little taste of it. You let me know if this sounds like a monk to you. Nice connecting with you. I miss seeing you in class. The person who this is written to is redacted, so I assume that this is a victim that he's writing to.
Sure.
You'd love sex class, I think.
Sex class again.
We went to Red Lobster for dinner. I gave him your greetings. He was on his way back from La Crosse, WJ to Fargo, ND, after servicing his latest find. There's about a 6 hour plus trip one way each weekend. She's apparently very special and might be the one, he says. He's such a fucking whore. I love him. He is sheer fun. I went to bed. He had a 2 hour plus drive ahead of him. I presume he made it without falling asleep. He says he jacks off in a sock when he starts to feel tired or groggy. Whatever works to be safe. Have a good week.
What
is does that sound like a monk to you? This is all public information, by the way. This is all this is the Minnesota Transparency Initiative has 15,000 plus documents of actual communications from these people. This is not a lie. This was happening around the corner from where this kid went missing. The fact that they were never questioned, the fact that they never they never put the screws to them.
Absurd.
There are blatant abuses going on. This is brazen. This is brazen as shit too.
Absolutely.
Most abusers like that do not use their school email like that.
No.
They know they're being unchecked.
That is arrogant.
It's like,
it's like an extra degree of sick.
When I was reading that transcript of the victim with Father Dan Ward or whatever, apparently somewhere in that when he was accused or talking to the victim or what have you, Ward's answer like to anything was like, oh, well, us monks have a really hard time when we want to have to like show affection towards someone. So it could just come out the wrong way.
Do we know if they had like, do you know what the campus security was like? Do you know any, I know there's no cameras.
There's no cameras. There's none of, as far as I could tell, at least near where Josh went missing, there aren't any of those like phones, you know, the blue light phones.
Yep.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Emergency phones.
Right. Honestly, I couldn't find a lot about security, which is telling in and of itself. Where are they mentioned in this story? Nowhere.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You know, we don't really hear about university police in this at all.
That's what I'm saying. So like, where did they come into play?
First of all, where the hell was Danny Heinrich, who killed Jacob Wetterling during this time period? Who
exactly?
What's he up to?
They don't think he had anything to do with it because he didn't cop to it.
This area, this time period as well, is also a black spot for Israel Keyes. He was not in Alaska yet. He was still in the lower 48.
Stop it,
Queenie. And we do have him in, by the time we're into April of 2003, we do have him taking flights, renting cars.
See?
Really not that far. And like he could have been doing that prior and we just don't have a record. As scary as that is, he was around. So that's
and the others
cool.
too. Now, did Bob Durst have anything? Where was Bob?
He was already.
What
in,
about Bob?
He was already implicated in Galveston.
That's true. Yes, that's true.
Correct.
That's
true. She's
so
right.
He but probably just, wasn't around.
I just like to blame him for everything.
For everything. So.
Probably
me
couldn't
too.
Have been him, unfortunately. Oh, this Walmering too was a licensed clinician. He was a clinical psychologist, like legit. So he could be having sessions with whoever privately, no supervision. You know what I'm saying? Just not good. Really,
I'm sorry.
Really not good.
All of this is going on, and you are going to question the legitimacy of a search dog who sets records and finds people.
I know this is so hard, Carly, because I do agree with you that there is a cover up going on to cover up sex abuses at the Abbey without question. Yeah. I do think that's going on and that's actively being hidden.
And they're not doing great because they're being found out.
Yeah. Cause people are coming forward because there's brave people.
Yeah.
Right.
Coming out and saying, listen, this happened to me and I can tell you exactly how it happened. And people are telling their story, which is good, which is will ultimately help other victims. Joshua Guimond was an incredibly well-spoken, poised.
Yep.
He wanted to be an attorney. He was in mock trial. He was working on his litigation skills. He knew how to stand up and say what he thought. Co-captain of the team. Sometimes, and this is not to victim blame at all, poking around in this and being as capable and as well-spoken as he was and coming out and saying, I want to expose this. And I want, there's something to be said sometimes for doing the research and keeping it under your hat a little bit until you have something to turn over, because it seems like he was cut off from whatever he was looking into. And it could be possible that the Abbey is sexually abusing people and that everybody knows about it and it's a well-kept secret. And that's completely separate from Joshua Guimond.
It could be. Absolutely. It could be.
But I don't see, I mean, the Stearns Police Department would tell us to think like an investigator. Homicides, typically somebody that you know, somebody that you trust, somebody that can get close to you, somebody who has access to you, all of those things. So for it just to be a rando that gets him into the car, I don't, it, the circumstances scream abduction. I do agree with Brian Guimond. It's amazing to me that nobody saw anything. That's what makes me think that he was pulled into a building, because it couldn't have happened out in the open like that unless he got into a vehicle with someone. But again, for what?
Exactly.
For why? For at what point?
He wouldn't need a ride home. He was right there.
What do you think happened, Carly?
I mean, the Abbey cover up just has, it's very compelling. It's very compelling.
It's there.
The abduction thing makes sense. I definitely don't think it was suicide. He definitely didn't run away.
No.
Absolutely not. With the scent though, and so I know the dog scent, whatever, but let's say it's credible, okay, and it's factual that he was in the Abbey. Yes, maybe in his research, he was like going to the Abbey to like try to like wheedle in and like find out what he could without exposing his hand at that point, maybe. I just don't think he would. So the fact that his scent was there and then went out to Lake Sagatikan and whatever in the back behind the Abbey is just too coincidental for me. And the fact that the Abbey didn't want them looking in there to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other reason for them to want to impede the search that way, unless they're hiding something. And I don't think them searching for a missing person, they would be scared that somehow they're going to find out about the sexual abuse while they're just trying to find a missing kid. I don't necessarily see that as being the reason they wouldn't want the search in there. You
know, unless what I mean? It's just totally unchecked.
Yeah.
Unless they just like got porn in there.
That's true.
And they're just, just like some, like something scandalous in there that you're just like, what the fuck? Like, why would this ever be allowed? Because honestly, just reading those emails just makes you go like, you guys aren't afraid of anything. You don't care at all. If you know, you're not going to get found out. You know,
they're like living in their own little world. Almost. It's like a totally whole other world.
And the missing 300 missing files on his computer.
Okay.
The monks could easily get into the dorm. The monks are in charge of the dorms at some point anyway. They could have easily gotten in and accessed the the computer in some way.
Yeah, I know. That's really, you know? That's a part of it that I'm just like, I don't know. I really don't know about that part. That's I'm trying to weird. Think, is there a security connection?
Right.
Is there somebody who could have gotten in?
Well, like the DUI, like the drunk monks riding around on campus and hitting them by accident. Maybe. Yes.
And when I read all the theories, like that was one of the ones that sticks the most with me.
But in all of our theories, Quinn's like, but where is his, where is he?
Is he?
His body, yeah. Where
yeah.
is where he the though? Fuck
is he? Yeah.
I mean, is he off campus?
Definitely off
campus. Did they Denise, take him in a I'm boat? Sorry. The boat held him weren't allowed to be searched.
Incinerator, Binnie's. The incinerator. If there's an incinerator, Binnie's. That is one hell of a way to get rid of a body with absolutely no evidence. No trace. Beneath.
You can't tell me the monks don't have access to that in some way.
You could see an abduction. What did Danny Heinrich do? Pulled a gun. He came to, he had an unfair fight, a group of children and a man with a gun. Mm-hmm. He demanded that Jacob go with him. And that was the end of it. In broad fucking daylight.
But that was an 11-year-old as well.
It's true. But I do think if you hold up a gun and tell someone to do something, they're probably going to do it. And if he held up a gun, or anyone, any predator that was out there cruising, held up a gun and got this young guy into his vehicle, that could be the end of it. Same thing with Craig.
Yeah.
By the time we got to the end of Craig, I'm like, okay, he got in a car. Because there's no trace.
Real quick, I just looked up. There is an incinerator on campus. It's the powerhouse. Okay. Stop it used it. To burn trash. 1986, they changed it to burn wood. And it is on the campus map. It is number 25. It is all the way to the right, top right, essentially, on the campus map.
Stop it. And it's right by the lake. Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And they could have been sexually abusing people for years and it was covered up. I truly believe there's really not much of a question about right. that. Whether it's related to Josh, I would say probably not, except for the fact that the fucking files were deleted.
See? Yeah.
That's Something's the part. Not, that's it is. Not that's
the part.
Normal.
He was going to school for law. What if he was researching about them and he found some shit out and exactly like, or built a case against one of them, Quinnies.
And he was following more of them. He was following in the footsteps of family members by wanting to go into law, politics, and join the Minnesota House of Representatives. So who knows if he has family involved in law firms, politics, higher up government, you know, seats or whatever that could have helped him along.
I want to talk to the other co-captain of the mock trial team. Yeah. I really do. I really, really do.
We don't know that that's not the ninth student, for God's sake.
It's true. Yeah. That's so true. Yep.
It is terrible.
I'll be watching out for that lawsuit. I really hope that Brian gets somewhere with that.
Most definitely.
We're on your side, Brian.
We are. Yeah. Thanks to Haley for this recommendation and all the research.
Thanks, Haley.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and that's Minnesota Transparency Initiative, mntransparityinitiative.com. You can read all the things about all the haps at the Abbey. It's got everything.
Do I want to read it?
Oh, it's bad. It's really bad.
I know.
I'm going to say not suitable for work. I'm going to say maybe don't research that one on the old work computer.
Send the kids away for that one.
But it's pretty rough. And then is Brian's site findjoshua.com?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's got, just like Carly's saying, campus map, timeline, all this, all info, contact, all the press Everything. About him, findjoshua.com. It's crazy because we've been doing this show for like a long time now. Yeah. And I'm still listening to cases going, I can't really believe that happened.
I know.
That your friend leaves the poker table and just gone.
Disappears.
See you Monday.
Okay. See you Monday, Beanies. Bye, Queenies.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.